Hello, and welcome to the Golden Thread Conversations. I'm your host, Judy Murdoch. Today, I'll be speaking with Erica Cleveland, an artist, writer, and former art therapist. Her mission is to work with women at mid to late life transition, whose roles and identities no longer fit, and who urgently want to connect with their true selves. Today, Erica and I will be discussing a new class she's offering on Befriending Our Shadow. We all have parts of ourselves we wish would just go away. Erica is offering a more empowering way to work with these parts of ourselves, and I'm so looking forward to learning more about this. So welcome, Erica.
Thank you, Judy.
Hello. Glad to be here. Yeah, I'm happy you're here too. So we talked briefly about sort of who this class would probably be for. I'm assuming it is, again, sort of for a woman who is in mid to late life transition and whose roles and identities just don't fit anymore. Mm-hmm. Can you say a little more about what kinds of things they might be experiencing?
Well, you can't get into this kind of conversation without talking about grief. I think there is, yes. And that's something that's, I mean, it's we're sort of living in that right now in the time of that we're still, I mean, it's coming to the end, but it's the pandemic, mm-hmm. but we're coming up to a milestone, which I think something too that comes up for women at this stage of life. There are milestones that are happening, they're coming up. So there's different losses. I think the law, change, what I think people that I work with are dealing with is the process of change. So that's just something that's mm-hmm. inevitable that we're all going through. Mm-hmm. But there's something about the changes that are happening at mid to late life for women that aren't always supported in our culture. There's mm-hmm. not the structure out there. There aren't the rituals and, mm-hmm. Kind of external markers for this time. Mm-hmm. So I think the kinds of losses I'm talking about and the kinds of losses that people who have taken this course have offered it twice before in an online format. I've offered variations of it in person before the pandemic. But the kinds of losses that people are experiencing are sometimes physical illness, recovery from cancer, various types of cancer, mm-hmm. Chronic illness, which is mm-hmm. complicated at times with the aging process.
Right.
And then, so that's sort of the physical challenges. Then there's also the challenges of identity in terms of who am I now? I've had this career, and many times it's women who've had very successful careers mm-hmm. and have had lived a life in that career, and now they're retiring or close to retiring, or they've something's happened and they've had to be forced to retire.
Right.
So what do I do now? Who am I? This has been my life. So there's grief in that. Yeah. So that's, and then even just looking at sort of lifetime patterns, how we've engaged with life. I think there's a time of reflection mm-hmm. to look at patterns that we've repeatedly, when we reach this age, it's like, it's time, we're ready to let go of this finally. I've always noticed that I do this certain thing, like whenever something happens, I do this certain pattern, and mm-hmm. maybe this is time, I can see it, look, the time of my death doesn't look so far away.
Right,
it's time to really finally really look at this. And
yeah, it's that's really hard. I'm we both are about the same age, and I've been realizing that, I'm like, I probably have another 20 years, and that's that's a really humbling, daunting realization to have that, up until now, I think I've always had that sort of assumption that I kind of had, almost an infinite amount of time to pursue a variety of different things. And suddenly at the age I'm at, that time has become finite. And 20 mm-hmm. years is still a nice chunk of time, but nonetheless, it's, you know, but
my mother's 86. So.
yeah. My mom's about that age as well.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I know what you're saying,
but it makes you start to realize that what I took for granted, I can no longer take for granted. The other thing I wanted to share was, I know that when my son graduated from high school and, he literally like left, he got his diploma and he literally hopped in the car and drove to the airport to do kind of like a summer internship. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, 1 minute, my life revolved around my son. And he's right. a very, you know, he's always been really independent, but nonetheless, when you're a mom, it's sort of like you've got this little antenna inside of you and it's always pointed at your child and how is your child doing? And, you know, you're just always thinking about that. And all of a sudden it was just like gone, like literally.
Oh, you're absolutely like, right. I think, yeah, it's true. And I think that I'm somebody who's, my children are just reaching that age or just have reached that age too. And I think many people of our generation had children later. So we're kind of having children leaving the home at the same time as, you know, mm-hmm. as we're going through the challenges that I described true. Before.
Good point.
And like, when I look at my mom's generation, you know, she was already done with all of that. You know, we were way out of the house when she was looking at these kinds of questions. So.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. And I guess there's always menopause, right?
Yeah. And that's another thing, the changes of the body. Don't recognize the body anymore.
And so it seems like, you know, when you talk about loss and grief, it's like a lot of times these can be really good things, you know, like when mm-hmm. my son left, he was leaving for something he was really excited about. And I was like genuinely happy for him because, you know, my wish for him is his mom has always been for him to be independent and, you know, sort of like create his own life and a life that he really enjoys. But it was really, at the same time, there's a genuine sense of grieving, you know, that suddenly like something that was there and was really important is no longer there.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the interesting things about this process when you get it, with the sort of this deep dive of the work that you do, that I do in my, and it's work that I do in my own doll making as well. Mm-hmm. And that I want to share, you know, more widely with others. Mm-hmm. And, you know, introduce people to the doll making kind of experience, is that you find both are true. You know, it's not like the grief or the right. joy, but that they're kind of both, you start to see how they're both present at the same time, and right. sort of a more mature
yes
acceptance that is one of the silver linings of this age. I think that earlier, when you're younger, it's all extremes and roller coasters.
Right. No, you're right. That's a great point.
You have a loss and that's just the end of everything. And I'll never, you know, my life is over.
I guess like what part of wisdom is being able to exist like with a level of peace with things mm-hmm. that are sometimes like feel contradictory. But to be
it's like the middle way. If you look at, mm-hmm. you know, if you're coming from a Buddhist perspective,
I agree.
Yeah,
but that's really liberating.
Yeah, it is liberating.
So
there's a real spiritual dimension to this. I guess that's what we're sort of touching on here. Is that there's a spiritual dimension to this process, mm-hmm. and part of what I talk about and I think about is this idea of the dark night of the soul.
I would like you to say more about that because the class is called Befriending Our Shadow. And that is something, I mean, because I'm sure, you know, like I'm in the time of life where your class your class really appeals to me. And I'm really curious about what you have to say about those like darker places of, mm-hmm. you know, the human experience and how does your class like help people with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I just first want to respect that people come from many traditions and some don't have any, you know, particular religious practice at all. But I find that in this kind of work, when you're looking into to oneself, you can't, for me at least, it's hard to avoid sort of a spiritual dimension to it. Mm-hmm. And the idea of the dark night of the soul is mm-hmm. finding that there is a point when we get to, you know, grief or whatever the strong emotion is, where there it doesn't really seem to be any way out. We're just at an end. You can't go left. You can't go right. You can't absolutely no direction. And one thing that's been interesting to me, to sort of take a little side note here, side step here, is the work of Sarah Payton. There's a book that she wrote called Your Resonant Self. Mm-hmm. And she is somebody, and I talk about her in the class, is who works with a neurobiology and, you know, really the new understandings that are out there about how the brain works. Mm-hmm. And she describes how our brain, you know, there's ways in which when we're overstressed and over just burdened and shut down, we're not able to access in full emotions, and our brain actually then comes to that point of only there's no choices, you know? So it sort of gets stuck.
Yeah, so I've experienced something
about that creative process, that where it sort of sidesteps the need for, you know, you don't need to think logically, you know?
right
you kind of move into that creative place where you're going down underneath, and maybe if you, I use a lot of visualizations, but just looking at underground where there's so much going on, you know, in the time of winter when it's dark and snow's on the ground and it's cold and we're feeling frozen and the trees aren't growing at all. It's the busiest time for the underground part, underneath, you know, the roots are
that's right.
And nourishment is happening and all of that. That's kind of what the part that we can turn into, you know, that stuckness, and where that logical brain is just like snarled into a big knot and it can't think of anything to do. Then we kind of let go of all of that and sink into this other place, and that sort of a place of stillness and reflection. And it can be hard. It can be hard at times. But it's so ultimately rewarding to experience it.
Yeah, I mean, I think my experience of it has been, you know, it's like, as you said, like you're not working on the problem. You really kind of like just put the problem to the side and you don't deal. I mean, this has been my experience. But at the same time, there's also, it seems as though there are parts of ourselves that are working on the problem, or perhaps are even making us a little, like making us more gentle and more able to receive that information out there that we didn't see when we were so focused on trying to figure it all out.
Absolutely. And Sarah Payton, I just love her work. She talks about how the brain, on the left brain, is that right? Is that the logical side? I always get confused. It can only make choices between A or B. So it kind of is like people in a long line, they have this object that they're passing one to the next, and they can only make one step and the next step. And the next step. It actually cannot think of anything beyond that. It cannot process. Right. But whereas the right side of the brain is just like sort of a undersea forest of seaweed and kelp, and it's all floating around, and it can go very far, and it, so multiple ideas, and so you have this opportunity to make these weird, sometimes seeming connections between seemingly unrelated things, that putting it all together more like a map, or sort of weaving instead of things.
Totally.
And so there's a lot of place for things like talking about fairy tales, and I talk about fairy tales, and, you know, seeing your life as a fairy tale. What do you imagine? What story would you imagine yourself as? You know, because there's so many stories in fairy tales where there's the protagonist has to go through these horrible.
Yeah, totally. Right.
And figure out some
kind of hero's journey thing.
Yeah.
Kind of hero's journey. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like with the shadow, what I said in the introduction is, I know, like, I was thinking about this before we talked, how when I was younger, you know, let's say maybe up until my 40s, I really believed with all my heart that I could like kind of get rid of my shadow, you know, like I could like, you know, like they were just like my shadow are just these like bad habits, or I just really believed that I could learn how to so they just weren't a part of me anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's how a lot of our psychology, like popular psychology and self-help and, you know, there's like a really strong theme of like, you know, like you can just like get it out. You can cut it out of yourself somehow if you just do this class or read this book. And at some point, like as I got older and I began getting interested in some things like positive psychology and understanding how we just have, we have traits and strengths and gifts in us, you know, that's just kind of part of who we are. And oftentimes our shadow is just an expression of that strength, but it's not in a good context. So like an example of that would be, I hate the phrase people pleaser. That really, it just annoys me, but I do not like getting into unnecessary conflicts with people. And sometimes obviously that can cause trouble for me, because if I don't share what I need with somebody or, you know, share my truth, it means that the relationship or situation, clearly something needs to change for it to be working, for it to work for me. And if I don't speak up, you know, like that will just continue, and often it doesn't end in good ways. But on the other hand, there are some really beautiful things about liking to make people feel better when they're with you. And, you know, I do feel like a lot of conflict sometimes is unnecessary. And my thing is sort of, I prefer to look at it as, how can we all get something we want, than, you know, turning this into like a zero sum game. Mm. So I've begun to look at it with a more compassion, I think, instead of looking at it as like, this is something to be extracted out of me. It's more to look at it as like, well, this is who I am. And why does this hurt right now?
Yeah. That's beautiful. I think that, you know, we do contain multitudes.
Yeah.
And we all contain all the ages that we've been. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to look sometimes at what age these parts of ourselves are coming from and what happened.
You know, yeah, totally.
There was an age where you got some message, so that was,
yeah,
you know, you had a way, sure, that you had to be. And so, yeah, it's helpful to some, it's helpful to go back, and, you know, we can go back and revisit that age of ourselves and comfort it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's, find the wisdom in whatever, yes, that message was. That
I
was,
think that's hurt, very healing.
I like what you're saying about, you know, it's kind of mishearing, just miscommunication, you know, that there's so much of a need in our society for listening and for sort of being,
I agree,
willing to stop the need in ourselves to have an answer or to have to right away, but rather just to,
yeah,
really take in what the other person is saying. And
yeah, where, no, I agree. That's another sort of like liberating experience, is when you can not need to have an answer right away and you can sit with a question instead, which, mm-hmm, you know, 20 years ago, I don't know how well I would have taken that, because I've always been a pretty like goal-directed person, but I've learned that there's something really nice about just being able to like allow the solution to come up when it's ready to come up. Mm-hmm. Even though I am often also that person who says like, so, you know, when do I make this decision? Like, when am I going to know? When is this project going to show up? You know? Mm-hmm. So kind of pushing to wanting to kind of like push things to move faster than they're meant to move.
I don't know a whole lot about alchemy, but one book I've been reading is by Matt Licata. And he talks about, I have it right here, let me see if I can get the right title. A Healing Space, Befriending Ourselves in Difficult Times. It's a shadow book that I really like, because there's actually, when you look around, there's a lot of literature about working with the shadow.
Yeah.
And I think there's some books that are kind of like what you were saying before that are like quick fix, kind of like
if yeah.
you read this book. And but his book isn't like that at all. And he talks a lot about alchemy. Mm. And if I can describe it correctly, apologies if I'm not explaining his approach correctly.
I don't know much about alchemy myself, so.
Oh, okay. So it's basically just sitting, like creating a container for mm. change to occur. So the alchemists, mm. mm-hmm. from what I understand, in medieval times weren't really trying to create gold, but they're trying to look at the properties of various metals, mm-hmm. and looking for healing properties within them. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, there was a really strong need to create a container for change.
Right.
But it had to be a container that was strong enough to hold the process of the heating that had to happen for that.
Right.
And then there was a point at which, I guess they call it negrendo, where it becomes absolutely dark. You know, it's like, there's some analogies to the sun, you know, this energy of the sun,
right.
if it was so compressed, or like mm-hmm. a black hole, it would be compressed so small, even though it's so much energy, it becomes
right.
black.
Right.
So the blackness is containing all of the energy, but if you don't realize that, you think, oh, it's the end, or it's darkness, or
infinite. Right.
But it's
right.
actually contained explosive energy that's in there. So
right.
it's really creating a container for that.
Right.
That energy of that change process.
Yeah, I like that. That's really cool.
Hold it safely.
I mean, I think there's like actually like, I think about the word crucible, but I don't think that's a crucible, but there is sort of this sort of like a more like vacuum container that can hold like a like extreme chemical process.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I'm sure somebody who's a metallurgist or something would be able to tell us what it is, but
yeah,
I just like the description, because I do feel creativity works a lot like that, where there's all kinds of influences coming in, and mm-hmm. you never quite know how they're going to work together, mm-hmm. but they often do work together in interesting, unexpected ways.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so I think from the alchemy perspective, one of the most important things is the container. Having
right.
a safe container that can
yes.
allow that process to happen. Because yeah. if it wasn't contained, like a science experiment, if you don't have the right container for whatever the
right.
experiment is,
good
the
point.
Whole thing could explode. But if you're able to yes. hold it, you know, while it could feel, that's the thing about change and about some of these processes, they can feel so explosive within.
Yeah.
So, but if you, yeah. it's harder if you have them in a very small space and you're kind of holding them tightly and afraid of them, rather than mm-hmm. allowing yourself as much space as possible.
Mm.
So the same explosion
very nice
within a very large space is going to have
right.
a lot less of an effect than within some kind of tightly held compressed area that you're where you're gripping onto it and being afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really kind of a counterintuitive thing that you would think, you know, mm-hmm. wanting to get a grip on things when things are changing, but really
sure.
you can kind of lessen the grip.
Right. Yes. I think that's wonderful. Yeah. And it sounds like then that is something that's the experience that you offer people in this class, is sort of creating a safe space that's not mm-hmm. overly structured, but you're mm-hmm. giving them a structure and you're
yeah.
giving them a process. And yeah. I think there's a kind of I'm speaking from my own, you know, my own way I am experiencing this, but I know for myself, oftentimes I need a little structure. I don't need too mm-hmm. much,
right.
you know, but I need a little bit of structure. It feels like it's a safety harness mm-hmm. and I feel like I won't go too, you know, like I won't like go running off the edge.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of gives me that sense of containment. And at the same time, you know, you're allowing people to do it sounds like some pretty deep inner exploration.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you're talking about, the structure, also really an important part of the structure is the group process.
Mm-hmm.
The groups are very intimate. There's no more than six, and there's three different sessions, but each one is no more than six people. Mm-hmm. But that having that structure of of the support of a group.
People yeah.
Same thing that you're going through. There's a sense of accountability to each other.
Oh yeah. Here
I have, not that That's you have important. A particular goal in mind, but that you mm-hmm. are going to be present and, you know, support each other and, you know, in a loving way and
yeah.
an accepting way. And that sort of can have a magical effect on
yeah.
whatever the painful process that somebody might be experiencing yeah. to have it to be witnessed.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, that something interesting about the doll making process is that the doll itself becomes a witness as well.
Yeah.
It has a face mm-hmm. and it looks back at you and it reflects mm-hmm. you back to yourself.
It sounds so beautiful.
Becomes a witness as well. Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds really cool.
It's a sort of changeable process. Like I was saying about the creative, the way the creative brain is like the underground with this, the seaweed floating around. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of change that happens. And
yeah.
women who've been in the group describe having every week a different idea about maybe mm-hmm. once of their, because we work with flip dolls. I haven't really shared that part of it, but the flip mm-hmm. doll for me is a doll that's two-sided connected at the waist. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's a perfect sort of vehicle for this process because mm-hmm. we can have the shadow on one side and then the other side is yeah. you know, sort of ourself working through uh-huh. it.
Yeah.
And so, but what's interesting is often it flips. Like women come uh-huh. into the thing, one thing feels like their shadow, the things that they're struggling with, uh-huh. it ends up being their ally in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
So, came into the group with an idea of her octopus. She had I guess nightmares about octopi for the plural.
Yeah.
She pictured it with these scary teeth and it was just this
yeah.
sort of monster. But as she worked with her doll, the octopus became her ally. And she began to say, you know, the octopus is, she was going through loss in various ways. And, sure. and the octopus became, you know, because it can fit into the smallest spaces, it can send out its agents yeah. to protect itself. So it really was
yeah.
an ally and a protector to her.
Yeah. That's right. It is interesting. Oftentimes we do find sort of those parts of ourselves that, you know, like our inner critic, for example, and we realize our inner critic is really just trying to protect us mm-hmm. quite often, you know, kind of protecting us because it just, you know, like it often comes up when we're children and, you know, like, and that inner critic is protecting us as children because we don't yet have the words and skills to really take care of ourselves in a difficult situation. So it's just sort of like, you know, well, don't say anything or don't do anything and just, you know, just fit in, don't call attention to yourself. But as we get older, the inner critic is, we outgrow it.
Yes. Yes. That comes up a lot. I know I struggle with that still myself. Very critical. That critical voice comes up
sure.
sometimes. Yeah. But one of the women in the group actually participated in two series of the course, and she chose to use, because I give sort of a simple structure of making a doll, and then people can mm-hmm. do whatever they want, you know, and mm-hmm. add on to it. And one woman chose to use very slow embroidered stitches, just a very simple stitch, and covering the whole thing with these sort of repetitive stitches. So it was a very slow meditative yeah. process.
Right.
And I became very interested in, on the one side of the doll that was kind of the critic side, the side of perfectionism, that was a lot of the voices. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued with the inside, the back of the stitch side. So that she ended up using that as the front of the doll, so that the messy side with the quote unquote imperfect stitches, that became the outside of that side of her doll. And it was in a way sort of accepting, you know, imperfection and
that
sort of critical voice in a new way and seeing it in a new way. But for her, just that process of stitching very, very slowly over a period of months
really interesting.
Helped with that process.
That's really cool. I really, you know, like the other thing that comes up for me as you're speaking is it does feel like there is some magic that mm-hmm. occurs in this class. And I often do associate magic with creative process because, as I said before, it's the creative process is kind of unpredictable.
Right.
You know, and the other thing that you had said was that, you know, like as your participants work on their dolls, the doll like in a way kind of begins to guide them in terms of where to go next.
That's exactly right.
And that's so cool.
Yes.
I love that.
My doll making mentor, his name is Barb Kobe, and she really teaches how to talk with a doll. And it's a wonderful process of really having a dialogue. Sometimes, you know, through drawing in response to the doll, or trying to write with your non-dominant hand, asking a question with your dominant hand, and then writing back with a non-dominant hand.
I like that.
What the doll has to say. Mm-hmm. And when you do work in this close way, you can find that the doll has its own opinions about things, and you know, opinions about what materials you.
It sounds wonderful. It sounds like such a wonderful class.
Yeah. People do enjoy it.
Yeah. So is there anything else that you want to share about the class? Because I want to ask you, how do people sign up and that type of thing? Mm-hmm. And is there anything else like that you would like to share about the class before you talk about that?
Oh, before the sign up details?
Yeah.
Oh, I think we mostly covered it. Yeah, I think just in response to what you just said about the magic, I think there is sort of the principle of synchronicity starts to happen. Mm. And it's like when you are in this intimate group of women, you start to see things in their story that that's my story.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
Sort of the synchronicity that they're having, that telling their story, and because it's somebody besides you, then you can see it in a different way than maybe you would have seen it yourself. Yeah.
It sounds really great. So also just to clarify, when there are two classes, is that correct? So
there's three sessions.
Okay.
There's three different days. So I used to offer two, but now I'm offering three.
You're offering
three. So there's Tuesday, Wednesday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Saturday. And if you look on the website for the exact times, it's Eastern, it's listed under Eastern Standard Time. Okay. I had some requests for Saturday. I mean, that's a new thing. It was Saturday morning, Eastern.
Okay.
The Wednesday class is almost full. There's only one spot left. The others have some space still.
When's the sort of official start date?
It starts April 5th.
Okay.
The first week of April. Yeah.
Okay.
But the early bird deadline is March 29th. There's a discounted price up until March 29th. And then the whole offer goes away April 2nd.
Okay. So people have approximately like 2 weeks from today, approximately.
Is that right? Two or three, I think. Yeah, I'm not sure. Well,
end of March, and we're on March.
Right, 9th. Yeah, probably 2.5, something.
And
like
for how long does the class last?
It's an 8-week course. Yeah.
Okay. That's a really nice length of time. That's kind of long enough for it to feel a little bit like a journey.
Yeah. Yeah. It was this experimentation with the length. It's the first time I offered it. It was a month, but I just didn't feel long enough. So 8 weeks seems to be.
No, it feels cool. So, I created a URL link for people who would like to look at the class information and sign up. And so that URL is bit.ly, it's bit.ly/shadow329. So I'll say that one more time. It's bit.ly/shadow329.
Okay. Well, I want to say one more thing. There's the three sessions that I described, and then there's another option that I call basic level course. Mm-hmm. Some people just can't make any of the times, or they would rather kind of be working in a more self-study way. Mm-hmm. And so they would be, there's a Facebook group. So there's a community of women there, and people share their process in the Facebook group. And this time I'm adding something new also, is even for the people in the basic level, there's going to be two group meetings, one halfway through and one at the end for everyone and all the.
Oh, that sounds really cool.
Basic level, just to sort of check in and see how they're doing and support each other. So
that's really cool.
An experiment.
So just to clarify, just for folks who might be listening, there's a basic level where you don't have to attend the groups. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. And so you can also make, you also have a choice in terms of like how involved you want to be in the group process or not.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds really good.
We've got two eBooks on all the levels. So one of them has detailed videos, a series of 8 videos. I don't remember exactly how many videos there are, showing you how to make the basic kind of doll, which you can start from. And then the other book ebook goes over all of the course material that's discussed in the classes.
Wow.
So it's written out, and it also has links to the guided visualizations. So you can kind of guide yourself through it.
Sure.
In the basic level, it's just you don't have that intimate group process. Which
right. No, exactly. No, that makes perfect sense. And so just to repeat also for people who are interested, there's a early bird discount that ends on March 29. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested and you would like to get the discount, sign up now or soon before March 29th.
Right.
Okay, cool. So Erica, it was like really just such a pleasure hanging out with you and learning about class. And I enjoy our conversations so much.
Yes, thank you so much. It was great to be back and talk to you again.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Judy.
And thank you everybody for listening to the Golden Thread Conversations.